Welcome to episode 181 of the Solomonster Sounds Off on SEScoops.com. It is Saturday, October 1st, 2011. I am the Solomonster, and it is October. Hard to believe. I know the cold weather is here now, but I have a special connection to the month of October, as some of you know. Plus, my favorite holiday of the year, Halloween, is at the end of the month, so I don't hate on October. In fact, I'm a big October fan. And it is indeed October 1st, and before I get into anything here, I just want to apologize to anybody who was inconvenienced by the sound off last week, going up late and not knowing what was going on. The biggest inconvenience of all was to me. I was ready to kill, quite frankly, last week. Podbean, which is the service that hosts the show every week, I don't know what happened with Podbean. They finally came back to me a little bit later on. After trying to find out what the hell was going on, they told me they were actually just migrating to a new server. It's going to be faster and better, and that's all well and good, but they did a piss-poor job of letting me, and I presume their other customers, know that this was going to happen. Had I known that there would be downtime due to maintenance in advance, I could have worked around that. Perhaps I could have done the show a little bit earlier, like I'm doing this weekend, and Podbean did not do that. So Podbean, go screw, is what I say. They're back in business now. Everything seems to be okay. And you should be listening to this at its normal time here on the weekend. But that's what happened last week. And that is also what forced me to do what I thought I would never do, which is put the sound off on YouTube. Sound off 180 will officially go down as the very first sound off officially to go on YouTube. It's gotten a pretty positive response. I know for some people it's a lot more convenient. People want to see the sound off on YouTube every week. And to that I say this. 180 will not be the last sound off you see on YouTube. In fact, I'm planning on getting the next episode, 182, which I'm going to talk about in a second, on YouTube, possibly by midweek. But at this point, I'm not planning on putting every episode on YouTube. It's just, it's a hassle. And, you know, I like being able to monitor certain aspects of the show, you know, what parts of the world it's being downloaded from, how many people are listening to it. And I know YouTube has a view count, but it just kind of skews things if I have it uploaded in all these different places. So there will be more sound offs on YouTube. At this point, I'm not planning on doing it every week unless there's just overwhelming support for it. And I know there's a lot of support, but it's a hassle, quite frankly. It's just another layer added to the whole uploading and posting process every week. So there will be more sound ups on YouTube sooner than you think, but at this point, not every single episode is going to be on there. So if that's what you're looking for, it's not going to happen. Now, having said that, one of the things I've been thinking about doing, and I'd be curious to get your feedback if there's enough support for it, as a special feature perhaps, is uploading some of the old episodes of SE Scoops Live, which is the old live show I used to do after Raw each and every Monday night with my partner in crime, Noah Mark, who I'll be reuniting with at the Survivor Series at MSG. And I saved all those old shows, and there are shows available through Blog Talk Radio if you look hard enough. I mean, it's kind of a pain. But I have all the shows saved and archived, and I'm considering uploading them one at a time, perhaps here and there through YouTube. So perhaps that's something some people would be interested in. So that's the update on that. One other thing I want to comment on here before we move on. Episode 182 of The Sound Off will you'll probably be able to listen to it by the time any of you are listening to this show. I'm planning on getting it up either late Sunday night and probably, if not then sometime on Monday. And that was the special interview that I just conducted with George Napolitano, who is the wrestling photographer of the stars and former editor, writer for multiple wrestling magazines and publications over four decades in the wrestling business. He's just a really nice guy, a fascinating guy, and some of the best friends that he has really are some of the biggest names in the business. We're not just talking about some guy that takes pictures at wrestling events. It's so much more than that. And the stories that he was able to tell about his relationships with people like Andre the Giant, Ric Flair, some funny stories in there. You know, he's befriended Hulk Hogan. Wrestlers used to stop by his home all the time when they were in the area in Brooklyn. And back in the day, the Steiner brothers, the Road Warriors, they'd stop by and come to his kids' baseball and basketball practices and stuff like that. How would you like to be the umpire in the Little League game for George's son if you made a bad call and you had Road Warrior Hawk standing off to the side? That might be a little bit intimidating. So it was a great interview. There's an hour of content in there. That's going to be episode 182, which should be up by the time you listen to this. And I really hope you guys enjoy it. I enjoy doing the interview a lot. It was one of the highlights of me being able to do this show, much like the interview that I did with the zombie, Tim Arson, was. It was actually a year ago this month, maybe even this week, that I interviewed Tim for this show, my first interview up until now. If you want to go back and listen to that, by the way, you can do so. It's Sound Off 129. And the interview with George, I enjoyed it every bit as much, if not more. So if you are a fan of wrestling history, you will love this interview. And I'm not just talking about, you know, the old days of Billy Graham and Bruno Sammartino and people like that. We do talk about that. But all the way up until, you know, the Attitude Era, Austin, Rock, the NWO, DX, and even the modern day, Cena, Orton, TNA, all that stuff. You know, George has a new book out, which was kind of the impetus of this interview, but we talk about so much more. So, again, I implore everybody, give it a shot. Even if you're a younger fan, you're not, you know, you haven't been a wrestling fan for that long, so you don't think it's something you'll be interested in. Trust me, for me, there was never a boring moment in doing the interview. And I hope everybody enjoys listening to it as much as I did conducting it. That'll be episode 182. It's just the interview. It's an hour long. There's nothing else. And again, that should be up by the time you listen to this. One word of caution for those of you, especially those who never listened to that first interview that I did with Tim Arson a year ago. I use Blog Talk Radio, as many people do when I have to conduct interviews. It's an easy-to-use service. You can patch in a guest. It's very you know, easy to do in the absence of having an actual studio with actual equipment that costs a lot of money. And as such, don't expect the same level of audio quality that you get from a normal Sound Off, which as it is compressed, you know, because otherwise if I uploaded the Sound Off in its raw form, you'd have 150 megabyte audio file that you'd have to download. But this show, the quality you've come to expect and hear in the show that you're listening to right now, it'll be not quite up to those standards. That's just the way it is. As a matter of fact, I sound worse than George does. My only concern was that my guest would be understandable, and George sounds fine. So do I, but it sounds like I'm calling in over a phone. So that gives you a sense of what the audio quality is. So before I get emails and posts on Facebook from people saying, oh my God, what's, you know, what's wrong with the audio quality? Please upload a better version. That is the best version. And I've listened to the interview now. I, you know, put it together, edited it and everything, and it sounds fine. So for those of you who are not used to hearing that level of quality, if you never used to listen to the old SE Scoops live shows, then you probably know what to expect. And for those of you who haven't, I just wanted to give you a heads up on that before people start pissing and moaning about that. So check out 182 and let me know what you think. I very much look forward to your feedback on that. All right, moving on. News of the week. This was actually a relatively quiet week, all things considered. Not a lot going on in terms of big breaking news like there's been in the past couple of weeks. And as a matter of fact, I was ready to just dive right into the Raw review, give my thoughts on that, and give my thoughts on ROH. I'm going to do all that and a mailbag. We'll get to that. But first, of course, there just had to be something that popped up. Yet another wrestler popped for DUI, and believe it or not, the person's last name was not Angle or Hardy. Shocking, I know, absolutely shocking. The news broke during the week on Thursday, I believe it was. Jimmy Uso, one half of the Usos tag team in WWE, one of the sons, of course, of Rikishi, Rikishi Fatu, was popped on a DUI charge in Florida. He was actually pulled over about 3:14 in the morning. And this would have been, I guess this would have been actually early on Thursday morning. And police down in Tampa say that an officer observed the defendant, that being Mr. Uso, traveling the wrong way on Howard Avenue in a silver Mustang. Nice ride, by the way. According to the arrest report, his blood alcohol level was 0.180, which was more than double the legal limit. So yet another bozo driving drunk, putting not only his own life but the lives of others at risk. I don't understand it. I don't get it. To me, there is no more selfish act than doing something like that. Now, granted, he's driving at 3 o'clock in the morning. You would hope that, you know, there isn't a family packed with kids in a car at 3 a.m. driving down the road, but that's not the point. It's still a stupid fucking thing to be doing. And especially if you're somebody in Uso's position. You know, the Usos have been on TV of late, but they're not exactly featured performers in WWE, and perhaps they never will be. But to me, somebody like Jimmy Uso is lucky to be getting any TV time at all. There's a lot of very talented guys, quite frankly, who would love to get the kind of TV time that Jimmy Uso is with his brother. And something like this will not go over very well in WWE, especially within the same week, virtually. that Linda McMahon officially declared her candidacy for Senate in the state of Connecticut in 2012. And the company becomes even more sensitive to things like this. We haven't heard anything as far as whether or not he's been reprimanded, released. It's entirely possible that come Monday morning there could be an announcement made to that effect. My guess is because we haven't heard anything at this point, he's probably not going to be released, although I don't know that. He could very well be released, and you know what? If he is, then good for him. My gut tells me he probably won't be released, but, and this is the big difference between WWE and TNA, and I hate to keep coming back to TNA, but I have to. It's worth bringing up. The fact that if this were TNA, and you had somebody like Kurt Angle, and I understand that Kurt Angle is a much, much, much bigger name than Jimmy Uso. Kurt Angle is the TNA World Heavyweight Champion. He is a main event caliber performer and has great matches, all that stuff. Okay, I understand that. But Angle has had at least two or three different incidents while under contract at TNA. And I believe he's been under contract to them since 2006 or 2007. And I cannot remember a single time in all these years that Kurt Angle has been with TNA that he has even been punished or reprimanded. Not even fired or suspended, but punished, fined in any way. It's possible he has been. You would think, though, news like that would leak out because the company would want the other performers and potential performers in TNA to know that they take these matters very seriously. But I can't recall a single time that I ever heard anything like that. So you have a guy like Kurt Angle who constantly gets pulled over for this, he gets in trouble for that, arrested for this, and in Jimmy Uso's case, I guarantee that WWE will not tolerate this. So even if they don't do anything here for what I believe is his first offense, if Jimmy Uso were to be popped, let's say, 4 months from now on another DUI or DWI or whatever, I would bet you my entire life savings, which granted, hey, to somebody like Vince McMahon, it's not even chump change. I don't even know what you would call it. Pennies from a wishing well. But I would bet my entire life savings that you would be able to kiss Jimmy Uso goodbye the same afternoon if this happens again. It's not even three strikes and you're out. Okay? So that's the big difference between the two companies and why I rail so much. And a lot of people do. They rail. They mock. They openly mock TNA. And if I were WWE, quite frankly, I would take action here as well. Perhaps they will. I don't know. This just happened towards the end of the week. Let's see what happens Monday, Tuesday of this week. Just a stupid fucking thing for somebody to do. It just, every time I hear this, every time I read a story about this, it just makes me angry. And to all the people saying, what's going on in wrestling? All these wrestlers who were driving drunk and getting popped for DUI. I mean, I don't know. Maybe all the wrestlers are driving drunk. We don't know. Not all of them get caught. But I would caution people that it's not necessarily a majority of the wrestlers that this is happening to. It only seems that way because we've heard a lot about it recently. Shane Helms. I don't know what happened with Shane Helms. I know he was in a very bad accident. I believe it was a motorcycle wreck. He got seriously injured. There is some suspicion that perhaps he was inebriated when it happened. There's that. There's Kurt Angle. There's Matt Hardy. Now there's Jimmy Uso. That's not a huge sample size. You know, there's a lot of wrestlers under contract at WWE and TNA. By and large, you don't hear a lot about this. It's just a small sample of people. But these things get magnified now in the days of all the wrestling sites and TMZ. TMZ now, I guess, is treating pro wrestlers like big-time celebrities because they're all over this shit every time a story breaks. And that just wasn't the case, 10 years ago. So anyway, that's the deal with Jimmy Uso. It sounds like he may still have a job, but I guarantee you, I would bet my life that if this happened again, he and perhaps even his brother, but certainly he would be out on his ass so quick, he wouldn't even know what hit him. So let's hope he doesn't repeat this because, again, I cannot think of a more selfish act than putting not only your own life. I mean, hell, you want to kill yourself, go right ahead. It's not something I want to see, but hey, Jimmy Uso wants to go kill himself. I could think of safer ways for him to do it than taking other people with him. So, one other quick piece of WWE news here. Apparently, James Maritato, a.k.a. Little Guido, or Nunzio, perhaps some of you know him as, who had been rehired just a couple of months ago by WWE as a referee, has apparently been released from the referee staff and is now taking independent bookings, I believe through Bill Behrens. So that's kind of a shame. I noticed him on TV. I thought he did a fine job as a referee. I think the way this all came about was there was a referee missing or they just needed him. He happened to be, I think, backstage at a local show at Madison Square Garden. He's from the New York area. This was many, many months ago, and he filled in. He just, you know, he volunteered to fill in, I think, as a referee for a match. And I think they liked his work. They ended up hiring him as a referee. Why they would now fire him and yet bring back Mike Chioda, who had been suspended on a wellness violation. I know Mike's been with the company for a bazillion years, but still, you know, to keep him and let go of Nunzio, a little weird to me, but what are you going to do? It is what it is. All right, so moving on here, we have yet another WWE pay-per-view this weekend. I swear to God, I was watching Raw Monday night, and I commented about this, I think, either on Twitter or Facebook, and I could not believe that there was another WWE pay-per-view this weekend. I thought for sure we had one more week until the next show, and there's Michael Cole talking about how in 6 days, Hell in a Cell, and I said, God damn, this guy sucks. He can't even get the date of the pay-per-view right. And then he said it again, and I think Jim Ross may have said something alluding to the fact that there was a pay-per-view this week. And I said, am I wrong? And I looked it up, and sure as shit, there it is. October 2nd is Hell in a Cell, WWE's next paper. Is it October 2nd or October? I don't even know what day it is. What's today? Today's the 1st, right? So it would be tomorrow, October 2nd. Anyway, I could not believe that there was another pay-per-view so soon after Night of Champions. It felt like there was a pay-per-view last weekend, and in fact, there was a pay-per-view the weekend before that. That's why it feels so soon. This is not good. Not good for WWE's pay-per-view buy rate, I can assure you of that. 2 weeks is just not enough time. I mean, even if they did a really, really good job of building up this show, which they did not. They did the best they could, I guess. But to me, they did nothing to make me want to buy this show. And I have a feeling that when the numbers come in, they're going to find that that's the case with a lot of people. The other sad thing about all this is the Hell in a Cell gimmick used to mean something in WWE. Hell in a Cell was cool. Hell in a Cell was innovative. Hell in a Cell was dangerous. You can sell people on the fact that people are going to get messed up in a match like this. People are going to bleed. They're going to get hurt. It's Satan's structure. There's only one way in. There's no way out. It was an innovative concept when WWE first created it, you know, having this cage match with a roof on top. I mean, it was something that people in the NWA and WCW with War Games and all that were used to seeing. But, you know, I, as a young WWE fan, had never seen a cage match in WWE, certainly, with a cage, you know, with a roof on top. And the first couple of Hell in a Cell matches certainly were memorable, even the ones that sucked. Kettle from Hell, not exactly a great match, certainly memorable. But, you know, Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker, Mankind and The Undertaker, Brock Lesnar and The Undertaker. See a pattern developing here? Anyway, here we are now. They have Hell in a Cell, its own pay-per-view. And I'm sure, I'm almost positive that when they started this, I probably went on a rant on this show about how they were going to kill the concept of Hell in a Cell. And sure enough, it took 2 years, but in fact, they have killed Hell in a Cell. And I know some people still love it, and I'm not saying I hate Hell in a Cell, but what I'm saying is, there was a time when it meant enough that you could sell people on the fact that they need to get this show. It's going to be special, because there's a cage match, there's a cell. That usually means the culmination of a feud, the climax of a feud, a blood feud between two guys that have already had a couple of matches, and the only way they can settle the score is inside the cell. And instead, what you have here in 2011 is a situation where it's no longer about, well, when do we have Hell in a Cell because, you know, these two guys need to settle their feud. It's time for a cell match. Oh, no. See, in 2011, what you have now is, oh, it's October, so it's time for Hell in a Cell. And regardless of what's going on, you are now obligated to have not one, but at least two cell matches, which is better than the three that I think they had last year or the year before. I think the very first Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, they had three, if I remember correctly. Different cell matches. At least now I think they only have two. It's a shame. It was inevitable, but it's a shame because it can mean so much more. It can really boost a buy rate. It can boost interest in the product. It can make a feud feel more special when, you know, it all climaxes inside the cage. You take John Cena, CM Punk, and Alberto Del Rio, okay? Cena and Punk, magic at Money in the Bank. SummerSlam, not as much, but they still had a good match. The bloom is off the rose. The thing about Cena and Punk, they almost seem like best friends now. You know, they heap praise on each other about how much they respect one another. They're out there as tag team partners on TV. Why am I supposed to think, or rather, why am I supposed to want to see Cena and Punk in a Hell in a Cell when I don't buy into the fact at all that either of these two guys hate each other? They seem like bosom buddies out there on Raw every week. Why are they in a Hell in a Cell match? Because it's October. Alberto Del Rio, he's the one heel here. Two baby faces and a heel in the cell. And they've done everything they can do with Del Rio. They did it on Raw. You know, they left him standing, looking strong, really laying those chair shots into Cena and Punk. And I'll talk about that on Raw in a second here. But, again, does it really feel worthy of being a Hell in a Cell? Of course not. So what works for Elimination Chamber and what works, I think, for Money in the Bank doesn't work for Hell in a Cell. I don't think it works for TLC either. But Hell in a Cell is the one thing that's really a shame that they killed this concept dead the way they did. But we've got a pay-per-view this weekend. We've got Cena, Punk, Del Rio for the WWE Championship in the main event. We had Del Rio tapped out clean to Cena at Night of Champions. And on Raw Monday night, he got kicked in the head and pinned clean by CM Punk on Raw. And they've got the TV tapings in Mexico coming up in a few weeks. I believe next week, as a matter of fact. My money in this match is on Del Rio getting the championship back. For Cena to retain, I would say that it makes no sense, but it didn't make any sense for him to win the belt back from Alberto last month. So what do I know? Punk? Yeah, Punk could get the belt back, but you know what? I just don't see it. And quite frankly, I don't think Punk needs the championship right now, just like Cena doesn't need the championship. Del Rio, he needs the championship. So my money is on him winning it back. I don't like this, though. I don't like that they're playing hot potato with this thing. I know it sounds like a broken record. It doesn't mean anything. The belt means nothing. I know it doesn't matter, but still, pick somebody and just stick with them. Just pick a person and stick with them. Is that so difficult? Pick Del Rio and just let him hold the title until WrestleMania. At this point, I don't care. You've got Mark Henry and Randy Orton for the World Heavyweight Championship. Hell in a Cell. Randy Orton has talked about the fact that this is Mark Henry's first foray into the cell. In 15 years in WWE, he has never once set foot inside the cell. And Randy Orton has looked like a bloodthirsty maniac over the last couple of weeks. He snaps. He goes crazy on people. He left poor Cody Rhodes in a pool of his own blood on SmackDown 2 weeks ago, walloped him upside the head with the ring bell hard way. And now we have the rematch between Orton and Henry. Way too early to be taking the championship off of Mark Henry. I would like to think that as poorly as they've handled the WWE Championship, they would at least have enough foresight to experiment with the World Heavyweight title and actually keep it on a guy that seems to be getting over. I know it's a novel concept that WWE is not exactly used to, but this is as good as it's going to get with Mark Henry, folks. I hate to break it to you. You know, he's been in this company for 15 years. He's almost 40 years old. He's had a lot of injuries. And for the first time in his career, he's managed to stay healthy. He's getting over. He actually comes off as a legit badass. I mean, there's people listening to this show that will never, ever give Mark Henry a chance. And I don't blame them. I blame WWE for that. And Mark Henry deserves some blame to a degree as well. Because he had 15 years to get his shit together and show people that he can be a monster. And WWE has tried to give him opportunities like that before. You know, he was managed by... Who's he managed by? He managed by Teddy Long at one point, I think. And then they put him with Tony Atlas and all this stuff. But the reality is, people are going to look at him a certain way because he's basically been nothing more than a mid-card guy for his whole career. I look at him for what he is. He's a guy that is broken through. He's not a great wrestler. Nobody will ever mistake him for being a great wrestler, but he doesn't have to be. Not everybody has to be a great wrestler. If everybody was a great wrestler, then all the great wrestlers like Punk and Danielson and people like that, they wouldn't shine through. They would just be another guy. Henry has this innate ability to really make people think and make people believe that he really is a pissed-off monster. You know, when he's walking up the aisleway and he's looking at the crowd and he sees somebody with a replica belt that they bought through WWE Shop or HighSpots.com or whatever, and he says to them, you know, yours is fake, mine is real. And he just says it over and over again. I love that. I absolutely love that. That's not scripted. That's not rehearsed. That's Mark Henry looking at this little 14-year-old kid in the crowd holding a belt, probably booing him or giving him the middle finger or whatever, and him reacting to it and saying, you know what? Yours is fake. Mine is real. Shut the hell up. That's what a heel does. And he makes it seem so real. You know, it's the kind of, he's the kind of guy that, again, if I bumped into him in real life in a dark alley or something like that, I would turn the other cheek and I would run for my life. He is a massive individual, and he's been playing his role perfectly. It doesn't get better than this when it comes to Mark Henry. He's not going to learn new moves. He's not going to suddenly be better in the ring, and he can't do this gimmick any better than he's already doing it. He is getting the biggest push of his career, and he is making the most of it. And for them to take the championship off him so soon would be a huge, huge mistake. You know, they're petrified. I know they're terrified to take the title off John Cena for more than 30 days. And I know they kind of feel the same way about Randy Orton, but you just have to resist. You must resist. The championship does not have to be on Randy Orton. He is going to get the belt back at some point. We all know that. There is no harm in letting him chase for it. In fact, traditionally, that's the way it's always been in wrestling. The babyface chases the heel. And there is no bigger heel on SmackDown right now than Mark Henry. And that says a lot about the lack of depth on the roster, and Christian had a bazillion matches, so his push came and gone, as it should have. Now it's time to move on to somebody else. Mark Henry is that guy. He deserves to go over on Sunday. He deserves to leave with the championship. He deserves to hold on to it for a couple more months, maybe until WrestleMania, maybe not, but to take the title off him at Hell in a Cell, quite frankly, would be a crime, as far as I'm concerned. Speaking of crimes, Kelly and Beth Phoenix got another match. This would be their third pay-per-view match in a row. Divas Championship on the line. I think they made a very big mistake at Night of Champions in Buffalo, Beth's hometown, by not putting the title on her. She is a heel, yes, and I know she would have gotten a huge babyface reaction, but who gives a shit? It was the right time to put the title on her. They didn't do it. This is the third straight singles match on pay-per-view. The first two ended virtually the exact same way. Kelly beat her with the exact same move via pinfall to retain the championship. And if Kelly beats Beth in the Cell fair and square, then I've lost all hope for this division. Obviously, it is well past time to put the title on, not even necessarily Beth, but somebody other than Kelly. Kelly has improved somewhat, I will say that. She's still not a great wrestler. She moves around very awkwardly in the ring. I'm not quite sure exactly what it is, but it's almost like she's afraid to be in there sometimes and to touch the ropes or climb the ropes and stuff like that. But this Divas of Destruction or Divas of Doom or whatever they call it now between Beth and Natalya had potential, and they killed it dead because they beat them so many times. And how are we supposed to take them seriously if they just keep getting beat by a Barbie doll like Kelly? Put the championship on Beth. You're in the Cell. I know there's not going to be blood, let alone in a Divas match. But this is the time for Beth to lay the beatdown of a lifetime on Kelly. And get her some sympathy from the crowd. And really show that these last two losses that Beth has suffered has driven her to the brink of insanity. And just have her go absolutely crazy on Kelly. And take the championship. So I look like a fool saying that Beth would win last month. But I think 2 weeks later here, I think now certainly is the time to put the title on her. So I'm going with Beth. Air Boom has been added to the show. They'll defend the tag team championship against the Dolph Ziggler, the U.S. champ, and Jack Swagger. And I'm just going to go with Air Boom just because I know they're trying to build them up as something special. Dolph already has a title. He doesn't need another one, although he is quite great. I do see a lot of good things in his future if he changes his name. But I'm going to go with Air Boom, retaining their tag team titles. We have Sheamus against Christian one-on-one. And what the hell? I'll go with Sheamus in that match. And we have Mystico Kara against Hunico Kara. And I saw somebody on the Facebook page made the crack. It's, you know, Sin Cara versus Sin Cara. So they guaranteed that Sin Cara was going to win this match. Hardy har har. I think that's a pretty safe bet. As far as who wins, it depends how long they want to drag this feud out for. If this is just a one-and-done match, I would almost say that you give Hunico the win, even if he has to cheat. If they're going to drag this out, perhaps until the next pay-per-view, maybe until the Mexico tapings and have a rematch on SmackDown, I don't know. Just something tells me that the fake Sin Cara is going to go over in this match. So I'll go out on a limb and say fake Sin Cara beats real Sin Cara in this match. And those are the matches right now, unless they add another one at the last minute. Hell in a Cell, Sunday night, pay-per-view. I know many of you will be watching this pay-per-view through, shall we say, shady means which certainly will not bode well for the buy rate of the show, which is important. I mean, I know some people say, who gives a shit about the buy rate? Let WWE worry about that. True, but the reason I care about the buy rate is the worse it gets, perhaps they'll finally ditch this pay-per-view and start using Hell in a Cell properly. And by that, I don't mean once a year. We have a Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. It only comes once a year. It's not that. It's not like they're having Hell in a Cell matches every month, but have it when there's a reason to have it. Don't just have it because, oh, it's that time of year. That's all I'm saying. Let's talk about Monday Night Raw, the go-home show to Hell in a Cell last Monday night. I could not get into this show at all. You know, it just was not very entertaining. Most importantly, it did less than zero to make me interested, as I said earlier in this pay-per-view, which, again, I did not realize it was on Sunday. It actually escaped me. I had to look it up and actually confirm that the pay-per-view was this Sunday. I couldn't believe it. Let's get into the good. There was some good things on this show. They continue to book Mark Henry strong. I just went on a Mark Henry rant, so this will just add to that. I'm actually quite amazed at the job that they're doing with him. While they continue to fuck up almost everyone else on TV, they teased a match on Raw with him and the Great Khali, which is just stuff that nightmares are made of. And we did end up getting that match on SmackDown. Perhaps, hopefully, that'll be Khali's swan song, at least for a while. But here on Raw, he just attacked him from behind with a steel chair before the bell. And or rather, no, with a chair. He attacked him from behind, gave him the World's Strongest Slam. That was pretty much the end of it right there. And as he walked to the back, he did that jaw-jacking with the fan, telling him that his belt was fake and his was real. I loved it. And he did this with great passion. And I have a note here. This is one of the notes I jotted down as soon as it happened, that the biggest difference between Mark Henry and John Cena right now, both as champions of this company, is how phony Cena sounds and how scary real Mark Henry sounds when he speaks. I never thought I would actually say that Mark Henry is a better promo than John Cena. And at the end of the day, Cena is far more articulate and far better. He has the ability to be a much better promo. But I'm gonna say it. Mark Henry right now is a much, much, much better promo guy than John Cena is. And I never thought I'd hear myself say that. I defy anybody to prove me differently. You can't, because it's not true. What I just stated is not my opinion. What I just stated is fact. Okay? That's exactly what it is. It is a fact. And it will continue to be a fact until they let Cena go out there and speak for himself. Beth Phoenix and Natalya finally got a win on Raw this week over Eve Torres and Kelly Kelly. And there, but by the grace of God, they finally won a match. CM Punk came out to do color commentary for the John Cena Christian match. I love this. Alberto Del Rio came out as well for commentary, but Punk was great here. He reminded me of how great he was last year when he was doing this, when he was out with an injury and he did commentary. And honestly, I didn't even really pay much attention to the Christian Cena match, so I can't really say how good or bad it was. It was just kind of there. It wasn't very long, but Punk was great here. Kofi Kingston, Evan Bourne, and Zack Ryder beat Dolph Ziggler, Jack Swagger, and the returning Mason Ryan in a pretty good six-man tag match. And Teddy Long made the match after Dolph pinned Zack in a U.S. title match after Swagger interfered. Air Boom made the save, so the match was made, and Teddy told Vicky to find a partner for Dolph and Swagger, otherwise it would be a handicap match. And can somebody explain to me why Teddy Long is still employed? What's the point of keeping him around as the GM when Triple H, as the COO, is on every show anyway, calling the shots? I don't get that. But anyway, Vicky brought Mason Ryan out in the middle of this match to be the third man, and my God, did he look jacked. I mean, how you can have a serious wellness policy yet put this giant neon sign back on TV is beyond my comprehension. Just beyond my comprehension. He looked as big as ever. Just completely unnatural. And thankfully, his hair, which still looks a little awkward on him, was nothing like what I was talking about last week. You know, if you go back and look at the image of him, I guess it was from Superstars a couple of weeks ago, I don't even know what you would call that hairdo. And his hair on the show was different. It was a little bit more normal. But they pulled a swerve here after he tagged in and attacked his partners instead of attacking Kofi and Evan. Crowd cheered for this. Ryan delivered a gorilla press into a swinging uranage on Ziggler, which allowed Zack to get his win back and pin the champion with the Rough Rider. So the little push for Zack Ryder continues. Again, how far it's going to go, who knows. But he's getting TV time and he's getting wins, even if he needs help with those wins. And that's all that matters. So good for him. After the match, Mason Ryan backed up the aisleway. He was staring at the ring and laughing. And I put this in the good category because the match was good. But also because I want to see where they go with Mason Ryan. I don't think he should be on TV at all. I will say that. But if he's going to be on TV, do we really need him to play the role of Monster Heel when we already have that in Mark Henry? He's doing a pretty competent job in that role. I don't think we need another one like him. And on top of that, the guy just looks clumsy. You know, he looks clumsy, slow, and plodding. Just, he moves very awkwardly. It's not natural. Watch him move around in the ring. It's something's off about this guy. And to me, it's better that he be a babyface than a heel, where people won't take him very seriously. You know, at least if he's like that and he's a face, maybe he'll turn into a comedy character, which, again, with him, I really don't care. But I have another theory here. Perhaps they'll hook him up with Zack Ryder, and he can start appearing on Zack's YouTube show, and maybe actually, you know, perhaps he's actually a funny, laid-back kind of guy. You know, when he was backing up the aisleway laughing on Monday night, and I'm looking at him laughing, something went off in my head that perhaps there's something there in terms of his personality. Maybe not, you know. Maybe the guy is just as exciting as a block of wood. You know, they haven't exactly given him an opportunity to show off his personality. So I don't want to judge the guy until I have a chance to really get to know him. Maybe he is a funny guy, you know, kind of like Big Dave. You know, some people say he's a doppelganger. Is that the correct word? There's a word for you. He's a doppelganger for Big Dave Batista. So perhaps, besides looks, perhaps he shares some of that personality as well. Big Dave has a lot of charisma and a lot of personality. And perhaps if you hook Mason Ryan up with Zack, and again, if Zack can feature the Big O on his YouTube show, then he can find a segment for Mason Ryan. I mean, hell, he's got a segment on his YouTube show called Ask the Heel with Dolph Ziggler, who he's feuding with right now. If that doesn't kill kayfabe, I don't know what does. So the Mason Ryan stuff, I actually want to see where it goes, where it plays out. And I have no faith whatsoever they're actually going to do any of this with him, but who knows? The guy could turn out to have something. Now we move on to the bad. Jerry Lawler was out selling his injuries from Mark Henry the week before. You know, because I guess he must have sat on a railroad spike or something, according to WWE. Anyway, he's hurt, and so Booker T replaced him. And the one good thing I can say about Booker is that at least he tries to put certain guys over and doesn't just bury everyone the way that Michael Cole does. I will say that as a positive about Booker T. But still, Lawler ain't what he used to be, but Booker is still a step down. The opening segment, classic WWE. You know, a bunch of guys coming out, one right after the other, to interrupt and then be made fun of by the babyface, who in this case isn't even really a wrestler anymore. So it's not like they're ever going to get their revenge on Triple H. Plus, this segment went like 20 minutes. It felt like 90, which was just 88 minutes too long. I hate segments like this. And Triple H had a joke at one point. You know, he called somebody an idiot. It was kind of funny. I hated this segment. This was just too long and too ridiculous. Speaking of ridiculous, David Otunga, one of my favorite superstars in WWE. So David Otunga is now sporting a bow tie and rallying the troops to file suit against WWE. He should file suit against whoever picked out his wardrobe. He said that wrestlers come to him backstage for legal advice, I guess the same way they used to go to Vader backstage when they needed real estate advice. I actually think that this may be the best role, believe it or not, for David Otunga. It's a natural extension of who he really is, being a Harvard grad and former attorney in real life. But I've made no bones about the fact that he is a shitty wrestler, and I am not a fan of his. And on top of that, I hate when they do a gimmick change for a guy overnight. I mean, if they want to change his gimmick completely, and really, this is a completely different character than the one he was playing even 3 weeks ago. At least keep him off TV for a little while. You know, let people forget about him before you bring him back. It's almost like 1 week he's coming down all cocky and cool as tag partners with Mike McGillicuddy, and the next week he's wearing what he was wearing. I don't even know what he was wearing. The only thing he was missing were the, you know, the spectacles and whatever Clarence Mason used to wear when he was running around as the so-called attorney in WWE. By the way, I jotted this down as I was watching the show. Is David Otunga the first Harvard grad to make it to WWE TV since Chris Nowinski? I think he might be. I think he might be. I remember Harvard, Chris. John Cena. Let's talk about John Cena, shall we? John Cena was charged on this show with the task of going into the ring and trying to sell us on how dangerous and savage his Hell in a Cell match is going to be this weekend against CM Punk and Alberto Del Rio. And in fairness, even if he would have cut a great promo on this show, it would not have been enough to make people want to buy this pay-per-view, I don't think. You know, again, with 2 weeks between shows, it's just an impossible task. But, he did not cut a good promo. In fact, this may have been the angriest that any John Cena promo has made me in months. And it also happened during the main event, when Cena came back out to do guest commentary. Reason being, John Cena is full of shit. I didn't believe a single word that came out of the guy's mouth any time he spoke on this show. That passion and conviction I spoke about earlier in the voice of Mark Henry is noticeably absent from the WWE champion. He has this over-the-top dramatic delivery in his promos like he's narrating a story or delivering a soliloquy in a Shakespeare play. Leave the storytelling to Sheamus when he comes to the ring, okay? Don't come out and tell me a fucking story and use cliche after cliche to make your point. Speak like a normal human being, not a goddamn cyborg working for Skynet. I mean, how could I relate to somebody like this? When Vince McMahon got Steve Austin to come out on Raw a few weeks after he won the championship, okay, back in 98, he got him to come to the ring dressed in a suit and tie, and they even took their picture together, okay? Remember this? They were smiling like they were the best of friends. It was all cheesiness. And then, of course, Austin stripped down to his undies, and he nailed Vince in the balls. But you know what? That guy in the suit, that's John Cena. In the eyes of all the male fans that boo him every single week, he's that guy. He's the kiss-ass that says exactly what the boss tells him to say, almost verbatim, snapping photos with the cheesy grin on his face, and it just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. If you want to convince your fan base to part with their hard-earned money, of which they're earning less and less with each passing year, this is not the way to do it. I know WWE scripts its promos, okay? But I don't want to see the words coming off the page as I'm listening to the top star in your company. And what I actually want to do right now, I actually want to play a clip from my interview that's going to be airing on the next Sound Off. I'm going to play a clip for you right now of my conversation with George Napolitano, a guy that has over 40 years in the wrestling business. He's taken pictures for and seen matches from all different types of promotions, regional promotions, WWF, WCW, ECW. He's seen tons of legends, including John Cena, over the years, okay? And this is just a snippet from our interview. We actually talked briefly about how scripted things are these days. Take a listen.
Today, every interview is scripted. Lou Albano, you can't script him. Whatever came out of his mouth, it was what it was.
Yeah, you mentioned the scripting, and on Monday I was watching Raw, and they had the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view this weekend, and they had Cena come out to do a promo in the ring, and yeah, I've never met the guy. I'm sure he's a really nice guy, and as a promo guy, he actually has a lot of great speaking abilities, very articulate, but his promos just sound so forced and so rehearsed. It's just so different than it was even 10 years ago.
Yeah, that's what made everybody different. You had at any one time, 20, 30 people saying what came to their head and came to their mind instead of one person telling 20 people what to say.
Right, and that's how they got over. I mean, more often than not, I mean, guys would be able to go out there, they have the freedom to ad-lib and show their personality, and that's how people got noticed.
Yeah, that's a very big difference that nobody takes into account.
And unfortunately, perhaps it's the biggest problem of all for the champion, the face of your company, the guy that you are sending out there to really take the rap that perhaps he doesn't deserve, but he takes it anyway because he's just not very good at trying to get these things over. So it's a big problem for Cena, and I think it's one of the biggest reasons why people hate his guts. I really think that if people could believe in the guy a little bit more and they actually felt like they could relate to him, he seems like a very nice guy in real life, as I said there in the clip, but just when he does promos like this, and every now and then he'll bust out a good one, you know what I mean? I mean, every now and then you see how good he can really be, and on Raw, this was definitely not one of his finer moments. And in the ugly category for the show, the only thing I could say is anal bleeding. Need I say more? On that note, on that vile note, we go from a television show that oftentimes will insult my intelligence to a television show that I actually thought was really, really enjoyable. And that is the debut episode of Ring of Honor on a Sinclair station near you. Again, not everybody here in the U.S. has a Sinclair station in their market. I live in New York. You would think New York, of all places, would have a Sinclair station. I believe we do upstate, but in New York City, anyway, we do not. So we, like many people listening to the show, fall into the boat of having to either pay money to see Ring of Honor, or we wait until the end of the week and get to watch the episode for free on their website. I'm going to talk about this in a second. First, I really enjoyed this show. I really did. We only got two matches, but both of which were tag team bouts. But it's the first show, and they had to introduce the audience to a bunch of different personalities, so I was fine with it. But I'm not a fan of having to pay $8 to see a show that, in various markets around the country, people can watch for free. You know, like I said before, you can wait until Thursday of each week to see the show on the ROH site. Unless you're fortunate enough to have someone send you a link to the show, as I was. That's how I was able to watch somebody who shall remain unnamed, but knows that their efforts are appreciated. Unsolicited, sent me a copy of the show, and I was able to watch it a couple of days ago, and I very much enjoyed it. Kevin Kelly's in-ring intro at the start of the show reminded me a lot of Joey Styles and the old ECW, the way that they used to introduce those shows. So I actually like that. I like that a lot. The production values for the show, I will say right off the bat, leaves a lot to be desired. It's something I think that will improve over time, but I was expecting more, I guess, from a company like Sinclair and to put more resources perhaps behind it, but you know, it is what it is. Again, it's not going to be WWE. It's not ROH and HD or anything like that. But I think in terms of the audio is something that definitely needs to be improved upon. As far as miking of the crowd, I remember reading reports from the tapings all those weeks back about the crowd was so hot and the crowd was so rabid, at least for some of the shows. They taped a lot in one day. And I feel like it didn't come across that way. You know, it was a very dark crowd, but it didn't sound as loud as I think it really did. Come across in the building. I think it really was quite loud. To me, it didn't come across that way on TV. And even the miking of what was going on in the ring, maybe it was the microphones under the ring, they need to work on that. That must be improved because that goes a long way, I think, in terms of enjoying the show even more. So I just wanted to mention that. Good to see Nigel McGuinness back. Whatever the issues are that have kept him out of the ring, I think he has the potential to grow into the role of colored commentator. For the first time announcing together, I thought that he and Kevin Kelly were pretty decent. They weren't great, but there's definitely potential there, and I'm certainly in favor of new voices not named Michael Cole. In fact, because of how goddamn horrible wrestling announcing in general is these days, I think Kevin Kelly and Nigel McGuinness are automatically probably in the top, like, two announced teams in all of wrestling right now, so they can only get better. First match on the show, we had Future Shock, the team of Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly against the Bravado Brothers. And I really liked the pre-match promos from both teams and the Tale of the Tape feature that they had. They used to do the Tale of the Tape on SmackDown back during when SmackDown was in its glory days, the what I call the Brock Lesnar era, because I remember back in that time period, Brock was the number one guy. You know, he was the champ. You had other guys like Edge and Eddie and Benoit. And then they even had some veterans on there like Hogan and Rock. I mean, SmackDown was loaded. It was the only time in history to me where you can honestly say SmackDown truly was the A show, even if it technically still wasn't. SmackDown has always been the bastard child of WWE. But anyway, off topic here. I like the Tale of the Tape feature a lot. I've said before that WWE would benefit greatly by incorporating elements of sport into their product and making it more realistic instead of shying away from all of that. And this is something they should be doing right now on their own TV. They could actually take a page out of the ROH playbook. I was impressed by Adam Cole's promo in particular before this match. He something about him, he has superstar presence to me, but the Bravado Brothers leave a lot to be desired. I was not impressed with them at all. Just, sorry to say, I just wasn't. This is my first time seeing either team. The match itself was pretty good, went about 10 minutes, lots of near falls, and somewhere in here there was a Justin Bieber chant, as one of the Bravado Brothers does in fact bear a striking resemblance to the Beeb. So I thought that was kind of funny. We had another reason to hate this team in that respect. Match ended with Future Shock hitting their Ride the Lightning move, which is a leg sweep clothesline combo, very similar to what the Eliminators used to do in the old ECW, so this was good. Kevin Kelly did a tape promo in front of a backdrop about ROH coming to a town near you. That reminded me a lot of the similar promos that guys like Gene Okerlund and Kenny Resnick used to do for WWF back in the day. Very, very similar, actually. And again, old school, very effective. I like it. Very much like those old localized promos. He interviewed world champion Davey Richards, who looked a little nervous here. Davey didn't look too good here in this segment here, but again, he'll get used to it over time. We got a report after this, filed by Kevin Kelly, from the ROH Best in the World Internet pay-per-view back in June. And he interviewed a bunch of fans waiting outside the Manhattan Center in New York. We got highlights from a four-way tag match between the Briscoes, the Kings of Wrestling, Haas and Benjamin, and the All Night Express, as well as the ROH title main event, where Davey Richards actually kicked the shit out of Eddie Edwards and won the championship for the first time. They spliced in interview clips with both guys, including one of Eddie Edwards, who said that when Davey delivered that final kick to the head at the end of the match, he was out like a light and couldn't remember a thing. Again, a nice touch that really made it feel special. They also showed Davey's in-ring celebration after he won. He paid homage to his dead grandparents, said that he didn't have any family. This was his family. And it just really putting over what it meant to win the world title. He will defend the championship on the show in 2 weeks, we were told. And that'll be against Roderick Strong, for those of you who did not read the taping results from a couple of weeks ago. So that's a match to look forward to. They are a segment where Jim Cornette explained to new fans what the Code of Honor is, which is basically shaking hands before and after every match in the ring. It's not a policy enforced by ROH, but rather it's meant as a show of respect between the wrestlers. And he said that wrestlers who do not follow the code are usually not too popular. So basically that means that if somebody's not following the code, they are a heel and you are to boo them. This was very effective. Again, I liked it a lot. And not quite as good as the old Jim Cornette segments on Raw back in 97, where he would just take 2.5 minutes to tear the shit out of WCW and you know, Hogan and Piper, Age in a Cage, and all that stuff. But Jim Cornette, shockingly enough, very effective in this role, I know. Jim Cornette actually bringing something positive to a wrestling show. What a novel concept that is. We got a segment where Jay Lethal was interviewed up next. He talked about having been in Ring of Honor when he was only 21 years old and then wrestling somewhere else, and now being back in the company at the mature age of 26. Says he intends to win the TV title from El Generico. That match comes up on the show next week. Main event was Chris Hero and Claudio Castagnoli, who is now Antonio Cesaro down at FCW, for those of you keeping track. And Chris Hero will be on his way to Florida very soon as well. They challenged Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas for the Ring of Honor tag team titles. We got another Tale of the Tape. I like how they give you the ages of the competitors as well. I didn't realize that Charlie Haas was almost 40 years old. This match, in many ways, was the most basic tag team wrestling match you're ever going to see. And that's why I loved it. I love this match. These guys have had far better, off-the-charts, awesome matches before, but that's not what this needed to be. This was exactly what it had to be. This was an introduction of people who were not used to seeing Ring of Honor or a Ring of Honor show. And you don't want to give them everything in the very first show. Even so, these guys went out there, they went back and forth, And, you know, the bad guys got the heat on the good guys for a while. Eventually the hot tag was made, and you know, the champions won clean. Everybody looked good in the process. This was, it's going to be a big loss for ROH when Chris Hero officially, you know, shows up in Florida and makes it official that the Kings of Wrestling are no more, at least in ROH. I don't know if they're going to keep them together in WWE or not, but that was pretty much it. You know, they previewed matches for next week's show, and that was the conclusion of ROH's debut on Sinclair. A fine, fine effort, and if I am able to do so, while I will not pay $8 to see the show on, I think on Monday is when, you can't even see the show on Saturday when you're paying. If you pay money, I think you get to see it on Monday, but I will not be doing that. But I would love to watch ROH every week if I have the time to do so. I think it's a product that deserves the support. I'm not going to say that ROH is going to take over as the number two de facto promotion in the country. At the end of the day, TNA still has you know, a cushy TV spot on a national cable network that ROH does not have, but we need all the wrestling competition that we could muster, and ROH has always been a promotion, kind of like the little engine that could. They always gave great action and great matches and even great comedy every now and then. It was a very enjoyable mix of the best of pro wrestling. And this was not a storyline-heavy show. I had people email me, and thank you, by the way, to all the people who did email me as I asked you to do so. I said, if you watched ROH, email me and let me know your thoughts. And many of you did so. And I don't think I got an email from anybody who hated the show or thought that there was no way they would ever watch again. So that's a positive. But this was not intended to be a storyline-driven show. So for the people who were not familiar with ROH before this, who said, well, you know, it was a good wrestling show, but there were no stories, so I don't know if I can get into it. Ring of Honor has stories. Okay, believe me, they do. They have stories, in many cases, better stories than even WWE or TNA. But that's not what the first TV show was all about. In week two, week three, week four, week five, I presume that we will begin to see some of these stories develop, and hopefully at that point people can give a better opinion on what their real thoughts on ROH is. But for a first effort, I thought it was solid, and I look forward to seeing more episodes in the future. Thumbs up. Time for the mailbag. If you have questions, comments, or anything else you'd like to send to me, you can do so at the Solomonster, that's the Solomonster, all one word, at gmail.com. We have a lot of letters and some birthday shout-outs to get to this week. And actually, the first birthday shout-out I want to get to here is to somebody called the Solomonster. That's right. Everyone else gets one. Why not me? I'm celebrating a birthday later this week. And I expect, well, gifts, cash, all that stuff, it's always accepted. Actually, it's accepted year-round. I don't really feel as though I need a birthday to get a gift, but anyway, I wanted to give myself a birthday shout-out this week since everybody else gets one. So with that out of the way, let's get to some of your emails. This one comes from David from the Republic of Ireland. It says, I, along with a growing number of others, am a big fan of Zack Ryder's YouTube channel, and like many, feel he is underused by WWE. At the same time, I was thinking, just how far can WWE push this guy? He reminds me of a kind of Santino Marella-type character, the goofy but endearing babyface who fans giggle at, but would never take as a serious main eventer. With his growing popularity, is it possible to make Zack a more legit wrestler who can win matches regularly and challenge for titles, or is his dorky Guido persona gone too far as people taking him seriously as a heavyweight title contender, or even a top-tier mid-carder? I think he can be a top-tier mid-carder, but with this gimmick as it is right now, I agree. He can't go further than that. They could try if they want to, but it will fail. The thing about Zack is he's a guy who was always better than the way he was being treated. You could say that about a lot of guys in WWE. There's a lot of very talented guys who don't get the push or the recognition or the television time that they deserve. That doesn't mean they all deserve to be fighting John Cena for the WWE Championship, though. Nobody is saying that about Zack Ryder. I don't want to see Zack Ryder challenge Mark Henry for the World Heavyweight Championship, A, because he'll get killed, and B, because it's not a match that excites me. What excites me about Zack is he's an underneath guy, as they say, who's entertaining. You know, his YouTube show is very creative, it's fun, and most of the time the comedy on that show is better than stuff I'll see on WWE television. So I appreciate that. I appreciate the effort. You know, he's a guy who he works Monday, Tuesday, you know, he's at the tapings, he comes home, and what does he do when he's home? He works on his YouTube show. He's always working on something new because he loves this, and I think it's infectious. I think it's great. I think he's a real fan. People can appreciate that, and I think that if he were to get a solid push as a U.S. champion at some point or Intercontinental champion, he should be very happy and very proud of that. He's probably making good money. Perhaps he'll make more in the future. And if he carves out a role for himself on television where he can get on TV every week, which is what he's doing, he's done it. I mean, he's already accomplished, I think, what he wanted to do. His goal was to get noticed. He wanted to get over. He wanted to get on TV. Well, guess what? He's on Raw, winning matches. He's on SmackDown every week. So the guy is on cloud nine right now. He should be very happy with what he's accomplished. As a world title contender, this character, it cannot work. So what they would have to do is turn him heel, have him stop doing his YouTube show. Perhaps, you know, he's in a tag match, let's say, with somebody like John Cena one week. And he's doing his whole broski gimmick. Oh my God, I'm so excited. Look at me. I'm teaming with John Cena. Bro, are you serious, bro? And he could do all of his shtick. And then maybe at the end of the match, he turns on John Cena. You know, he attacks him from behind viciously and violently, just stomps the crap out of him. Gives him a rough rider through a table or something, and then the camera zooms in on his face, and he's got this very stoic, kind of serious, angry look on his face, rips the headband off his head, and stuffs it down Cena's throat. I mean, they could do that with him if they wanted to, but it's a big risk, because you're killing the one part of his character that people are into. So the minute you do that, the question is, are people going to buy him after knowing him as this, I don't want to say a jobber, but knowing him as this comedy character, as this goofy Guido, as you call him, for so long, could they then take him seriously as a normal, kind of stoic, scripted heel? I don't know. I don't know if he can pull something like that off. I think right now he should be very happy that he's getting noticed and very happy that he's getting as much TV time as he is. Rory writes into the Sound Off, just listened to last week's show, excellent as always. I heard you say that you wonder if they still sold the commentator radios at Night of Champions, the headsets that people buy. He said the answer is yes. The guy sitting next to me was using it. However, I did not see a lot of people using it. I wonder why. But there you go. There's your answer. Apparently, they are still selling them at the pay-per-views. Also here, Robert sent me a message, and he said that one of our listeners has a birthday coming up. His name is Chris Chandler. And wanted to know if I could give him a shout-out on the Sound Off. It would mean a lot, so happy birthday, Chris. Got an email here from Andre, who says, please tell me I'm not crazy, but I think Natalia is hot. My friends laugh because they say she's shaped like a man. I think she's really hot in a tomboy kind of way, just trying to see if anybody else agrees. I happen to think Natalia is very attractive. Especially of late, she looks very good. In fact, you know, you say she's really hot in a tomboy kind of way, but to me, she's also built a lot like Caitlyn on SmackDown. And Caitlyn used to be, and I think still is, into fitness and bodybuilding and stuff like that. And I don't like the women who really go hardcore with the bodybuilding. I think that's just disgusting. But I happen to think Natalia, much like Caitlyn, although Caitlyn more so, very attractive. Absolutely, I think. I think your friends may play more to the Playgirl crowd than the Playboy crowd, if you catch my drift. Mir from Chicago writes in, my question is, do you believe that this year's Money in the Bank was the greatest B-show pay-per-view in history? I was there that night, and something very weird happened when Punk came out. They played the promo video, and it was so loud it was deafening. Then when Punk came out, my ears almost went numb. I tell you what, it may well be the best B-show pay-per-view I've ever seen in WWE. Canadian Stampede back in July of 97 was also an excellent show. It depends on your definition of B-show, because to me, the first ECW one-night stand in 2005 is still, it's probably the most or one of the most fun times I've ever had watching a WWE pay-per-view, which is funny since it was an ECW show. Would you consider one-night stand a B-show WWE pay-per-view? I don't know. It depends on your definition of that. If so, I'd have to go with One Night Stand. And I think if I were in attendance at One Night Stand, it would have been even more phenomenal. Again, I regret not going to that show. But Money in the Bank this year, it's hard to find another event, another, quote, B-show pay-per-view, especially in the last 10 years that WWE has done, that from top to bottom, for the most part, was as good, fun, and excellent from just in terms of being entertained, in terms of the in-ring action, the two Money in the Bank matches. The main event felt like a WrestleMania main event caliber match. And I wasn't in the building that night, but the reaction from that crowd, I've gone back and I've watched it, I've listened to it, it's amazing. I can only imagine what it must have been like to be in that building when the promo video ended and the crowd was chanting CM Punk, CM Punk, and then the chant started to die off a little bit, and they were waiting. They were doing it on purpose. They were waiting and waiting and waiting, and then his music hit, and the place exploded. And it was one long, nonstop pop. It didn't stop until John Cena's music hit. And then I've never heard a collection of jeers at one time, simultaneously, the way that I did at Money in the Bank when Cena's... All that happened is the first riff of his music hit. And almost in unison, you had almost 20,000 people at the same time boo. It was like nothing I've heard before. So you may well be right. It may well be the greatest B-show WWE has ever done. Corbin writes in with a scary statistic. Since John Cena won the WWE Championship in 2005, it has changed hands 32 times, 19 of them of the 32, to Triple H, John Cena, Randy Orton, all of whom have won it a combined 19 times, I believe. Do you think the WWE Championship would have more prestige today if it was not tossed back and forth between those three wrestlers? I don't think you really need me to answer that question to know the answer. Matt from Fort Worth, Texas, writes in with three quick questions rolled up into one. Number one, were you a fan of Big Dick Johnson? No. Number two, is Evan Bourne the best at selling moves in wrestling today or possibly ever? Today, maybe, ever, no. And question three, did you ever watch Wrestling Society X, WSX, when it used to air on MTV? I think I saw the very first episode, and I never watched it again. Brian Pulley from Utah writes in. His birthday is coming up, his 20th birthday, on October 7th. It's the day after mine. And wanted a shout-out on the show, so happy birthday, Brian. He's got two questions here. First, he was watching WWE's OMG Top 50 Incidents DVD. And one of the incidents happened on a show called Shotgun Saturday Night. This was the first time I had heard of this show. I was wondering what it was and what happened to it. Basically, Saturday Night's main event was kind of the original Saturday Night show that WWF had back. It started in the mid-80s. And, you know, back when I started out as a WWF fan, Saturday Night's main event was the shit. I mean, it was awesome. And they had a lot of things... They did a lot of angles on that show, as a matter of fact, over the years. And it wouldn't necessarily work the same way in today's day and age because every show has to be special. You know, you have Raw, you have SmackDown, and they're always, I mean, they're having world title matches on TV, and all the big stars are on every single show. Saturday Night's main event, that's why it didn't work when they brought it back in 2006. It died a death on NBC. Well, that's one of the reasons. So that was Saturday Night's main event. And in 1997, they brought Shotgun Saturday Night to the air. And I remember being very disappointed because I felt, well, if they're bringing a Saturday Night show back, why not just bring back Saturday Night's main event? The name had such a great historical connotation for me. I was very disappointed when they renamed it to something else. But they wanted to do something different. The idea was they would bring the show to a different, small, intimate venue every week somewhere in New York City. And I believe the first one, if I remember correctly, was at the Mirage nightclub in New York City. I'm not even sure if the Mirage is there anymore. The second or third episode was from Webster Hall, which is still there. As a matter of fact, I saw TNA at Webster Hall back in 2008. And Webster Hall is a world-famous dance venue. It's not a wrestling venue, but they cleared one of the floors for a TNA show, and it was actually a lot of fun. They did a Shotgun from there. I remember that show because there was a Bret Hart Mankind match. It may have been the first ever Bret Mankind match on TV on Shotgun from Webster Hall, and it was interesting because they had these pole dancers. They had these hot women, half-naked women dancing by poles, and I remember after the match or at the end of the match, Mankind crawled out of the ring, and he was crawling on his hands and knees up onto the area where one of the women was dancing by the pole, and she was all freaked out by this and ran away. So I thought that was kind of funny. They did another one from God, what was it? Was it the All-Star Cafe it was, or Hard Rock Cafe or whatever? And that was the episode I remember, I think Fake Diesel, a.k.a. Kane, got pied in the face by Sable, if I remember correctly. Eventually, they actually had some shotguns outside. They had one in from this club called Denim and Diamonds, which I believe was in Texas, and that was Terry Funk was on that show, and he just went off. I mean, you talk about shooting. He was saying things that you just never heard back then on a WWF show. But anyway, it was a fun show for what it was, and it didn't last very long. Probably my all-time favorite memorable moment from an episode of Shotgun Saturday Night was, again, one of the early episodes from New York City. They had a show, if you could believe it, in the middle of Penn Station, one of the busiest transportation hubs, not only in New York, but probably in the world. And it's just this nexus of transportation in New York City. And they actually put a ring in the middle of Penn Station. They had a crowd. And I believe the match was Undertaker and Triple H. Ironically enough, they would go on to have one of the greatest matches in WrestleMania history. And anyway, they kind of ended up by one of the escalators. And Undertaker tombstone Triple H on an escalator. And as Triple H fell down, the escalator is bringing... I believe Undertaker was still at the top, so he didn't go down. But he basically tombstone Triple H. His limp, lifeless body was laying on the escalator as it came down very slowly. It was actually a really memorable visual. And you might be able to find clips. In fact, I know you can find clips of the show on YouTube and stuff. Again, the show did not last long. What ended up happening was they stopped having the shows live from these bars and nightclubs in New York. And eventually they just, basically they turned Shotgun into what would be a modern day version of Superstars or Metal or Jacked, where they kept the Shotgun name and the Shotgun logo, which was basically just like a police badge. And they would tape matches before Raw, basically, and just air it. It was nothing. It was stupid. It was dumb. The concept at that point was dead. But it was just something different and unique that they wanted to try. And the second question Brian had here, why is it that back in the day during the Monday Night Wars, WCW would say Vince McMahon's name on TV and talk about WWE? But TNA doesn't do that. They'll just say the, quote, other wrestling company. Are they afraid of being sued? I don't think that they're afraid of being sued. I think TNA has this warped view where it's like, we don't want to mention the name by the competition by name. We don't want to mention, you know, WWE by name. We don't want to mention Vince McMahon by name. Perhaps because in their minds it would be low rent to do so. But yet they don't realize that far too often on TNA programming, and it used to happen a lot more back in the day, they will constantly reference WWE and how... And really, I don't even think they realize sometimes that the way they bring it up, it makes their own company seem so Bush League and second rate by comparison. So they still bring WWE up. They just typically will not mention the company or mention Vince by name. There's no, you know, edict, I don't think, that you're not allowed to do that. If they're going to bring it up, they may as well mention him by name, quite frankly. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what goes through TNA's minds, you know, 88% of the time. So, last question here from somebody who is a regular listener but did not put their name in the email. So, again, if you email me, give me your name. Give me your name, where you're from, and, again, how long you've been listening to the Sound Off for, if you're a member of the Triple Threat, all that good stuff. But at least give me your name. Anyway, he wanted to ask a question. He had heard some rumors about Eminem, not the candy, but the rapper. Rapper slash actor, I guess you have to call him. Going to WWE on a website called MediaTakeout.com, he wanted to know, what do I think about Eminem possibly joining WWE? Who would be a good opponent for him? Blah, blah, blah. The reason I bring this up is I first heard this story like a year ago, maybe more, actually. And just for future reference for this person and anybody else listening to this show, if you ever read anything on MediaTakeout.com or credited to the website MediaTakeout.com, automatically assume that whatever it is bullshit. Because that website has built up a reputation for starting stories on their own that then get picked up and a big deal gets made about it, and there is absolutely no smoke to the fire whatsoever. At least that's been my experience with that website whenever a big story gets picked up. I first heard of the Eminem thing. It was around WrestleMania time. Maybe it was even 2 years ago. This is an old rumor that you're hearing about, and there's absolutely no truth to it whatsoever. Eminem is not coming to WWE. If he ever did, Eminem and Mark Henry, personally, I think I'd like to see that match. I would pay to see that match. But otherwise, don't believe it. It's BS. And if you have MediaTakeout.com in your bookmarks, you might want to take it off there. I'm going to wrap up the mailbag for this week. Got a lot of good questions from you guys, including some that I didn't have a chance to include here. It's getting a little late, but I will try to respond to some people directly. Keep sending your questions in. I do see everything that you send me. TheSolomonster@gmail.com is the email address. And, of course, you can become part of the Triple Threat, which I'm told now may have to expand to the Fatal 4-Way now that YouTube is included. But you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Solomonster. There were people on Facebook asking, who am I interviewing? I talked about the fact that I was going to be interviewing somebody for a show coming up, and nobody knew who it was, or some people didn't know. If you followed me on Twitter, you would have known, because I tweeted a picture of the book that this person authored that I reviewed a couple of weeks ago. So sometimes I'll put stuff on Twitter that isn't on Facebook and vice versa. So follow me on Twitter, twitter.com. It's at Solomonster, I guess, and facebook.com/TheSolomonster, all one word. Friend me on there if you have not already done so. You can subscribe to this podcast in iTunes. Go into iTunes, type in Solomonster Sounds Off. It's free. It's very easy to do. And anytime there is a new show, it will automatically be downloaded for you. So, for example, there will be another Sound Off within the next few days. My exclusive interview with Mr. Napolitano. Not sure which day it's going to go up. You don't have to worry about that if you're an iTunes subscriber. It will automatically download for you as soon as it appears. And now, the debut, the YouTube channel. It is official. Solomonster is on YouTube, even if every single show is not. I will be putting more content on that channel. I got a ton of new subscribers once people learned that I actually had a YouTube account that dated back to 2008. So if you do not subscribe to my videos on YouTube, you might want to do that. My username on there is TheSolomonster, all one word. I don't know if uppercase, lowercase makes a difference. It's sentence case. So it's basically uppercase T, H-E, uppercase S, and then the rest of the Olomonster, I guess, would be the rest of the name. So TheSolomonster is my username on YouTube. Subscribe on there anytime a new video goes up. Of which there may be more in the very near future. Again, you will be notified of that. So a lot of different ways to keep in touch with yours truly here and the Sound Off. So definitely check that out. Again, I leave you with a quick word about the next episode. Episode 182 will not be next weekend. It will be out a lot sooner than that. Check back on SE Scoops and subscribe in iTunes and all that. It should be up within the next 48 hours. I'll just have to kind of pick my spot when I want to put it up. I want to kind of try to spread it out a little bit here. Definitely check out the next episode. Again, it's my hour-long interview with wrestling author slash photographer slash Hall of Famer, in my opinion. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that a guy like George could be one day inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. I really don't. If they start putting referees and ring announcers and people like that in there and people from outside the organization, with the number of friends that he has made over the years and the work that he's done, he is as deserving as anybody. In fact, he may be more deserving than some of the people that are already in their Hall of Fame. So I really enjoyed conducting the interview with him. And his new book, it's called Hot Shots in High Spots. I talk about it in the interview. It's not all about the book. I really took it as an opportunity to ask him a lot of really good, really interesting questions. Including one that you might find interesting about the Montreal Screwjob in 1997, of which he was at ringside for. As a matter of fact, if you go back and watch the end of that match when Earl Hebner called for the bell and Sean had Bret in the sharpshooter, George is actually on camera at ringside facing the hard camera. And I asked him about that. He has a very interesting take on the Screwjob. I hope I don't get him in trouble. So anyway, check out the interview. Let me know what you think. And we'll be back with a new regular episode next Sunday. We should next Sunday. So until next time, be well, stay safe. We'll see you right back here next week on The Sound Off. Take it easy, guys.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solar Monster sounds off on SEScoops.com.